A bizarre, unfounded, malicious conspiracy theory has shifted from the message boards to the mainstream.
Political gain. Ed, you've written about the subject. How is it that Christians have fallen prey to such conspiracies?
And today, we want to focus on the astonishing rise in conspiracy theories. What's that all about?
They promise to unlock secrets, to open windows into hidden worlds. But what's driving the global rise in conspiracy theories? And how do we tell between fact and fiction?
This is Global Affairs Today. Let's start the conversation. Hello and welcome to the program. I'm your host, Imani Cherry. Nowadays, it seems like people are questioning everything. QAnon, fake news, and theories around COVID-19 are just some of the conspiracy theories we're encountering. Typically, we've dismissed conspiracy theories as being on the fringe of society. But today, these conspiracy theories have taken center stage, having real-world consequences impacting even our political institutions. Today, we're getting into psychology behind why people believe in conspiracy theories and what we can do to discern between what is truth and what is conspiracy. Helping us unpack this topic is Dr. Torben Berglund, a psychiatrist and psychotherapist who is also an associate director of the Health Ministries Department of the Seventh-day Adventist World Church. Welcome to Global Affairs Today, Dr. Berglund.
Thank you very much. I'm happy to be with you.
So, in your experience as a psychiatrist, why are these conspiracy theories so appealing? Why are they going viral?
Well, I haven't encountered them much in the therapy room. This is more, I think, circulating out in society, and people typically, they don't go to a psychiatrist when they have these issues because they don't think there's something wrong with them. So they wouldn't seek, typically they don't seek help for it. What I think is at the core of much of the dynamics we are seeing with conspiracy theories is that they serve a need. It's a very real need that people are having. And the need is to make sense of what is going on. I think we are living in a time where many people feel that there's so much uncertainty. We have pandemics, politics, all kinds of things, environment, social issues, and people, I think people are concerned, people are afraid, and they want to understand why is all of this happening. And I think that is at the core. So in that sense, there are deeper issues than just the conspiracy theories. The conspiracy theories are symptoms of a deeper issue that we are facing. And somehow it seems like these issues have become very prevalent in the time we are living in. And research on conspiracy theories, it has boomed the last decade. We probably had conspiracy theories with us as long as more or less the human race have existed. But it seems like this time, for some reason, they are really becoming more prevalent in these times that we are in now. And that's this search for understanding, search for explanation, what's going on. And I think one of the things that is problematic about conspiracy theories is that they are only theories, but they're often treated as if they are like certain facts, that they are knowledge. Theories, by definition, is an attempt to explain something. And if we deal well with theories, we don't only try to prove them. We also see what is it that goes against this theory, what is contrary. And we are open, we should be open to consider all the facts. But when people get in a way hooked and stuck on conspiracy theories, seems like it works the other way around, that it's often a theory that is lacking like definite evidence and knowledge. It's a theory that is created, often quite speculative, and then everything is interpreted to prove that theory rather than to consider all the facts and have a sober process of reflection around what is going on.
So what makes one's mind susceptible to a conspiracy theory?
Well, it can be many things, and it can be different from person to person. The research on this has indicated that, as some, I'll just mention it, people feeling powerless, people being anxious, people being relationally anxious, and also what we could say existentially anxious, wondering what's going on. That is something that makes people more susceptible to going into conspiracy theories. And we see also that people who have a very strong need for identifying patterns, meaning in what's happening, they are also more susceptible. We as human beings, we struggle with randomness. We struggle that things happen without a reason, without a purpose. We are always seeking to find something, that there is a meaning behind what's happening. We want someone to be in control, that things just happen for without reason, without purpose, can be more threatening in a way than thinking that there is some kind of evil person or power behind it. Somehow it can be seen a bit paradoxical, but still we prefer that someone is in control, even someone is responsible, even if that's someone who is not a good person or good organization or whatever. We want to be able to explain that it's intentionality, there's purpose, there is meaning, even if it's a negative one that is behind what is happening.
So, Dr. Berglund, can anyone be susceptible to these conspiracy theories?
Yeah, I think basically all of us are. We all have some kind of level of alertness to what's going on, what kind of threats are around us. And the more we sense that there are threats against me personally, my group, whatever it is, then we are all more prone to conspiratorial thinking. So that is very important, like then to try to consider the facts, be sound in how you assess the kind of information both you consume and what you incorporate in your belief system. And I think especially in this, being cautious about what kind of information you're consuming, what you're putting into your mind, that is very important.
So Dr. Berglund, thank you so much for joining us and informing us about this really important topic. So we're going to take a quick break, but when we come back, we'll dive deeper into the impact of conspiracy theories. Stay right there. We'll be right back. Welcome back. We're talking conspiracy theories. What are they, and how can we sort fact from fiction? I'm glad to welcome two guests today to help us with these questions. Michael Peabody is an attorney practicing in Los Angeles, California, and is the founder of Religious Liberty TV. And Dr. John Shapashik, a theologian from Avondale College in Australia, who's written on the subject of conspiracy theories. Welcome, gentlemen. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
Yeah, thank you. It's a pleasure to be with you.
So, Michael, I'm going to start with you. Just the basic definition. What is a conspiracy theory?
A conspiracy theory is an idea that explains why something is in the world. If you have a question about what's going on, you wonder what's happening, you begin to theorize about what is really going on behind the scenes. And it's easy to come up with a theory that may or may not be true that explains the unknown events.
So there's a legal theory of conspiracy found in criminal law. What's the difference between that theory and some of the theories that we're seeing circulating today?
In law, the idea of a conspiracy is when you have two or more people getting together to do some type of nefarious act or commit a crime. And conspiracy theory is the idea of actually getting behind the scenes, trying to figure out who is causing whatever you see going on in the world and who is actually committing that type of a conspiracy.
So I want to cut to this quick clip. Let's take a look.
Police say many of the attacks have been motivated by a false belief that 5G technology is linked to the coronavirus pandemic. Research by King's College London and polling company Ipsos Mori shows a strong correlation between belief in such conspiracy theories and a reliance on social media for news, including Facebook, YouTube, Twitter and WhatsApp, rather than broadcast or print media. Among people who believe the coronavirus does not exist at all, some 56% cited Facebook as their primary source of news.
So 56% of people cited Facebook as their primary source of news. John, what is the impact of social media on this conversation?
I think that it has a tremendous impact. It provides a type of a quick fix. People actually discover everything that's put on media without analyzing it, critically evaluating the source of information, evaluating the data. Rather, it's a sort of like quick response, immediate response to the basic needs that they have at the time. So they flick through the media, social media, and they take on board without sort of experience a kind of critical evaluative assessment of the information, whether it's factual or not.
So, John, I want to ask a question. You've written about conspiracy and prophecy. What's the difference between a prophecy and a conspiracy? And are Christians more susceptible to conspiracy theories because of that?
Well, it depends what view you take in relation to prophecy. Prophecy can be very sort of predictive. It can sort of foretell the future. However, if you look at the prophetic utterance from a biblical and theological perspective, I think prophetic utterance has more substance to it. It provides assurance in the divine providence. It encourages people with hope. It encourages people with encouragement. So it depends what view you take on prophecy, whether you see it as a sort of series of predictions. Okay, and then you make assumptions whether they fit into your ideology or not, or whether you see it more from the perspective of the divine presence in human life, which brings assurance and substance to the quality of my life.
So, Michael, how do we not confuse the term prophecy with conspiracy in our daily lives?
I think a lot of times people are trying to find an explanation for what's going on around them. And prophecy tends to focus on what God is doing. Conspiracy tends to focus on what people are doing. Who is to blame for what we've seen? Who is in charge of what's going on behind the scenes? Who can we say is causing the problems that we see in our lives and that we see around us? And it's very natural to look for conspiracies. It's always people want to follow the money and see who's in charge of the pain that they're suffering. But it's really important to remember to always evaluate these comments and make sure that they make sense. Talk to somebody else and see if they pass the basic test of, is this factual? Does it make a lot of sense? Is it something that I should pursue further? Or is it something that somebody's simply making up to try to explain something? And they themselves have no idea what's going on.
So, John, where should we look for our sources of news and facts?
That's an interesting sort of and thought-provoking question, because people tend to have access to a lot of information and so on. But I think basically when I looked for answers regarding my spiritual life, I tend to seek answers in the Bible, trying sort of to understand the big picture of God's self-revelation, rather than be focused on event-oriented spiritual experience and judge my spiritual experience on the events that surround me. The Bible tends to focus my attention to God's big picture and how it relates to the quality of my life. And I think that's important for me. So the first primary resource that I tend to respond to is the Bible.
We're going to take a quick break, but when we come back, we'll be continuing this discussion. Stay right there. So, Michael, where should we look to find primary sources of news? Should we look to social media?
I think social media has a lot to offer, but I would also say look up the organizations that are supposedly involved in the conspiracy. See what they say. Look at the skeptics. See what they say. Weigh the evidence and draw your conclusions based on a full range of evidence. A lot of times people will listen to somebody's theory about what's going on, and they'll go with whatever is the most sensational without paying attention to whether or not the facts actually pass the basic test of truth and make sense. You know, some of the conspiracy theories out there are extremely outlandish and very unlikely. Now, on the other hand, you may have a situation where you have a person who is, you know, engaged in some type of activity and people are warning about it, but they're not sure exactly how to address it. And I'm thinking in terms of like the story of Jeffrey Epstein, that was a conspiracy theory for a long time and ultimately turned out to be true. So it really has to be evaluated, each thing on its own merits, and take a look at it from a wide variety of angles before so you start to blame somebody for creating a whole bunch of evil in the world.
Right. I've heard somebody say that when you encounter a conspiracy, usually they break down in a few years, but conspiracy theories, you know, if a million people are doing something, you know, it's hard to keep that a secret. So why is there such a strong link between social media, that sensationalism of social media, and conspiracy theories? John, what do you think about that?
Look, I think it's a quick access to the information, and the kind of a receptive influence without the necessary sort of a time for critical evaluation. People want a quick fix information, whether it's right or wrong, and they don't take much time to evaluate it because it responds to their emotional needs. So if something responds to emotional needs, you generally grab it and you accept it as truth. And that's why, you know, I'm a little bit nervous about, you know, the impact of the social media, because it removes from our relationship and from our view of life the possibility of an ongoing dialogue, a critically evaluating dialogue. I'm listening, I'm evaluating the information, I'm sort of making a sense of it, and then I've got to decide at the end of the day whether it's right or wrong. On what basis do I decide whether it's right or wrong? Is it just on my emotion, or is it all on the specific evidence which comes from reliable resources rather than from people's opinions?
Right. So, Michael, you're an attorney, and I have a really easy question. How do you critically think? It sounds like such an easy term, but it's actually quite hard to do sometimes. How do you do that?
Well, I think one of the problems with conspiracy theories and the way people approach them is they start with the answer and then work backwards from there. They say, well, I think person X is doing this, so I'm going to look up person X, and I'm going to join a group of people who are talking about person X and are engaging only with people who believe a certain way. And so critical thinking really takes stepping away from the groupthink, stepping away from the echo chamber, and looking at a wide range of evidence, just like a jury would do if they were presented with evidence for a trial, and trying to decide based on what they've learned what the truth is. And you have to test the truth. You have to be challenged, be aware of what other people are saying. You know, for instance, the Flat Earth Society is coming back into vogue. There was a documentary about it I saw recently, and you can go to Flat Earth Society meetings and only meet flat earthers. And so if you go there and you're the one person who says, hey, the world is round, then everybody's going to look at you like you're the crazy one. And so you want to avoid that type of narrowed down community. And if social media has created something, it is the fact that you can join those types of communities and really associate only with people who have that very, very narrow viewpoint.
So, John, if one of our friends and loved ones, you know, falls, you know, in the trap of conspiracy theories, how do we talk to them?
It's difficult. I have friends who actually are sucked into this whole concept of conspiracy theories. And I must admit, I find it difficult to convince them about the possibility that they are on the wrong track. And my approach is, you know, maybe simplistic, but in some cases it works because I'm saying, chill out, okay? Just evaluate why you accept to believe what you choose to believe, okay? Does it make sense in life, okay? Does it empower your life with meaning? With purpose, or does it simply tantalize your information? Now, I'm not trying to convince them. I'm trying to challenge them how a certain idea fits into their pattern of life. Because I've noticed that no matter how much evidence you provide, people still choose to believe what they want to believe, and they hear what they want to hear. So I think from my perspective, even from the perspective of faith, I'm not trying to persuade people to believe, because I don't think that's not what God does. God gives us freedom to choose. Now, I need to have that ability to choose on the basis of something that makes sense in my life. And that's why I feel coming back, forgive me for coming back to that, of this whole concept of prophecy. I see the entire Bible as God's prophetic utterance. Now, it's not events-oriented per se. It's event-oriented. It points us to specific event, which actually is, as I evaluate, I can trust that it has a substance. And I think for the early Christians, the death and resurrection of Jesus Christ was the event, the fulfillment of that event. And so what I'm trying to point out is it depends how you view the whole concept of life, God, what's important to you. Do I just rely on tantalizing information, or do I accept something which empowers the quality of my life?
So we need to wrap things up, but before we go, we like to leave our viewers with a quick takeaway from today's discussion. Michael, let me ask you first, in maybe a few seconds, tell us how to practically discern between truth and conspiracy.
Well, keep reading, keep looking into materials, get information from a wide variety of sources, and let's keep your mind open.
Right. John, what about you?
Step back, and I agree with Michael, step back, chill out, evaluate what is truth, on what foundation and on what evidence is that specific truth based, or what you believe in, or just step back and look at life from the perspective of the big picture. Don't get tied up with the rat race of events which kill the quality of your life.
I like that. Step back and chill out. Well, thank you, Michael. Thank you, John, for joining us today. It's been a
pleasure.
Great conversation. And thank you for joining us today. And as always, you can connect with us at any time. Go to hopetv.org or talk to us on Twitter at GlobalToday7. Until next time, I hope you keep the conversation going. Goodbye now.